Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 66. Brahma continues, "You have many forms. All are transcendental. They can be understood only by the Lord's causeless mercy awarded through devotional service." 2-5. Srila Jiva Goswami comments exhaustively on the Lord Brahma's logic regarding the Lord's supreme form, which he reveals to the devotees. In his Bhagavad Sandarbha Anucheda 51, "The form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be considered fully transcendental and spiritual because it is eternal, all-powerful, all-pervading, the shelter of everything, transcendental to all gross and subtle forms of material energy, manifested in the hearts of all conditioned souls, manifested only by the Lord's own wish, and clearly described in all the Vedic literatures. The supreme philosopher, Brahma, has described the Lord's form in the three verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3:9, 2-4. Sridhar Swami comments on these verses in the following words. Someone may object, "Is it not true that you have not actually seen the transcendental Supreme Lord? You may have seen some form, but that form is simply a production of the three modes of material nature. It is not at all transcendental, for the transcendental Supreme God is devoid of all form and qualities." Thinking someone might argue in this way, Lord Brahma spoke the first two of these verses. In the first of these verses, Brahma says, "The form which I see is eternally free from material contamination, and is voluntarily advented to show mercy to the devotees. This incarnation is the origin of many other incarnations who are all situated in the platform of transcendental goodness. I, who am the Rajoguna avatar, are born from the lotus flower grown from your navel home." 3:9-2. In the second of these verses, Brahma says, "O my Lord, I do not see a form superior to your present form of eternal bliss and knowledge. In your impersonal Brahman effulgence in the spiritual sky, there is no occasional change and no deterioration of internal potency. I surrender unto you because, whereas I am proud of my material body and senses, your lordship is the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and yet you are untouched by matter. You are the original creator of the material bodies and the senses of the conditioned souls, and you are the ultimate object of worship." 3:9-3. Thinking someone might consider the Supreme Lord's form to be only recently and not eternally manifested, Brahma spoke the third verse, saying, "This present form, or any transcendental form expanded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is equally auspicious for all the universes. Since you have manifested this eternal personal form upon whom we, your devotees, meditate, I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You do not reveal this transcendental form to those of us whose minds are attached to the path of impersonal speculation." At this point, Krishna might object, "If this is true, then why is it that some people decline to worship me?" To answer this question, Brahma says, "Those who are destined to be pilgrims to hell neglect your personal form because of speculating on material topics and accepting the faulty logic of atheistic philosophers. 394, last line. That's a pilgrimage to hell. Yes. Right? It's even more poetic than going to hell in a bucket. Right? Yes. So even the Acharyas, they outdo all other poets. Right?
Yes. The royal road to hell.
Yeah, the royal road to hell, yeah. Yes. Okay. Destined to be pilgrims to hell. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was just dropping in.
Yes.
Not staying for any length of time. So the impersonalists are going to bring out this point that the material energy being all that we see, then whatever we see must be made out of external energy. So the deity is external energy. That's their idea. So you're saying you've never seen the Lord, because their idea is you can't see the Lord because there's no form, right? But now they're going to want to argue down on this level, right? But instead of letting them argue here, where they'll just waste your time, just take it back to the root. But this thing is they're saying, why do they even, you know, consider that there's no form? Okay, then because the Lord is unchangeable, right? He's Brahman. Okay, but if he's Brahman and unchangeable, why do we have the material phenomena? That's change. So therefore, you know, why do they, their philosophy doesn't stand. Why are they even arguing? So since they don't even understand how Brahman has manifest all this, why are they even bothering speaking about deities? Does that make sense? Because the difficulty comes up is that they're going to say that this is all due to illusion, that there is all this. So it's not actually here. But if there's only Brahman, where did illusion come from? Right? They say it's from the jiva. Where did jiva come from? Jiva comes from the Brahman covered by illusion. But where? One, how can, by Brahman being covered by illusion means there's a transformation. So the jiva is the transformation of Brahman. So that's not possible. Right? And also, where did the illusion come from? If there's only Brahman, where did the illusion come from? Yeah. So in other words, there's nothing to even discuss here. So unless you can work this out, then only when you understand that, then we can start discussing about Brahman. Because the fact is if everything's Brahman, then the deity's also Brahman. What's your problem? You know, you say, well, everything's Brahman. We'll say yes. But then there's the supreme Brahman. Right? That Brahman for which all other Brahman has come, who is unchangeable. So that's the we have no problem with everything's Brahman and that the material world is changing. Because this Brahman, this temporary Brahman, that is then manifest from the supreme Brahman. So it all exists and it's all Brahman, but this being the external energy Brahman has temporary manifestation. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the point is we're not, it means the element of monism that we appreciate, but not exclusive monism, that there's only monism. That's the problem.
And even just discussing it from their point of view is still illusion. So why?
It is, it's illusion, and anything that you speak, they speak is illusion. So you're just wasting yours and everybody else's time, and at the same time, you and us don't exist. So there is no waste of time, so there's no need to even discuss it at all, because whatever you do. So, you know, why don't you go talk to the truck driver about, you know, mechanics or something? It's got just as much meaning as discussing Vedanta, according to them. You know, so, right? Like that. So since we say it's all Brahman, and it's therefore it's real, because Brahman is Brahman Satyam, right? So therefore it's all real. And so they're saying it's illusion, so you're just wasting everybody's time. So then why waste their time? Go waste your own time. Right?
Yes.
Like that. So in other words, you don't engage on their platform, because this is what they want. They're mental speculators. So they can speculate all day. And that's what they'll do. Right? We want to come to conclusion. They don't. Right? Because coming to conclusion means their philosophy isn't valid. Right? So, okay. Right? So, yeah. Because Brahma is the spiritual master of the greatest philosophers, He never accepts any view in opposition to that expressed in these verses. The impersonalists and atheists, however, do not accept these statements of Lord Brahma. The impersonalists had previously been described by Brahma in these words, avyakta, vartma, bhiniveshitatma. Those absorbed in meditation on the impersonal feature of the Supreme. The atheists were described by Srila Sridhar Swami at the end of the previous quotation. Although the transcendental form at the end of the previous quotation, in other words, how do you say? Atheistic philosophers accepting faulty logic who are destined to be pilgrims to hell.
Yes.
Right? They were previously described by Sridhar Swami. Yeah. Although the transcendental form of the personality of Godhead is clearly established by all authorities, the atheists reject the direct experience of the learned devotees and insist there is no God, right? So that's the thing, is they're afraid of the Abhida explanation.
Yes.
Right? By the Abhida Shakti, that will give direct explanation that when it says God's a person, it means God's a person.
Yes.
So they always want to use Lakshana Shakti,
yes,
which means that no, it's saying he's a person, but actually he's not a person. You know, it's the person within that person that's the person. You know, it's like that. They just go on and on. So they never want to actually accept. So whatever verse is there, they'll always twist it. Right? It's not about finding conclusion. You know, finding Siddhanta is just about they have a concept, they want to win the argument, that's all. It's not actually open for discussion. That's why it's also a waste of time to spend any time talking. Because they're not looking for answers. Right? If you find someone who happens to be an impersonalist but they're looking for answers, then they'll appreciate the logic that's given in Vaishnava Vedanta. But if they don't, then you're wasting your time, right? Better to go do something else, you know, like take a nap. It'll be more elevating than talking with them, you know. Like that. On the other hand, the devotees who are qualified to properly understand the Supreme Lord's transcendental form are described in the following verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.5, where Brahma says, O my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet, carried by the air of Vedic sound through the holes of the ears, accept your devotional service. For them you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. In this verse, the word tu, but, is used to contrast the devotees of the Lord with the previously described non-devotees. Brahma describes the devotees saying, O Lord, the devotees have faith in the existence of your transcendental form because they accept the Vedic revelation as the highest. Right? So this is the thing, is because they don't know, because of the monistic element, there can't be variety. So they can't understand that the Lord, Brahman, has energy. Right? And so that's already there, two aspects. And then that energy, there are different forms. So there's the internal and the external. Right? So what we're seeing is the manifestation through the external energy. Right? So the universal form. But the Lord in His transcendental original form, that's through His internal potency. So He's appearing through that. Right? So that means He can appear anywhere in any shape He likes, because it's His desire, His Icha. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why that particular, any particular form is manifest. It's His desire. Us, it's based on our desire, but we're forced to accept. Right? We have a desire, we perform activities, the result of that then forces us to the particular form that we have. Right?
Yes.
So that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so that ends Jiva Goswami's point. Okay. Now Lord Brahma starts to speak about those who are full of anxiety due to not having a taste for the lotus feet of the Lord. Quote, O my Lord, the people of the world are embarrassed by all material anxieties. They are always afraid. They always try to protect wealth, body, and friends. They are filled with lamentation and unlawful desires and paraphernalia. And they avariciously base their undertakings on the perishable conceptions of my and mine. as long as they do not take shelter of your safe lotus feet. They are full of such anxieties. Footnote 11. Similarly, in Bhagavatam 10:14-36, it is stated, "My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for the family members remain foot shackles." So, all of this is Krishna's. Right, the home is Krishna's, the relatives are Krishna's, the facilities one has is Krishna's. But if we don't see it connected to Krishna, it binds us to the material nature. We see it in connection with Krishna, the same things then are assisting in freeing us from this material nature. So it's not about just saying, it's not just speaking. You know what I'm saying? One has to actually do it. Right? Abhideya means it's done. Not it's talked about. Sambandha, you're talking about it. But you don't get results from Sambandha. You get results from Abhideya. Right? You perform an activity, you get a result. So unless you do it, you know what I'm saying? So, it's good that we say, no, but everything's connected to Krishna. That's good, but unless we're connecting it, we're not getting that benefit. Right? Unless you plug the machine in, it doesn't work. You can talk about, yes, this machine, it does so many things. You know, you just plug it in, it does so many, but unless you do it, it doesn't happen. Yes?
So it means Mishra Bhakti just slows down?
Yes, it slows down. Because, in other words, the part that's bhakti, that's what's dynamic. And the part that's not, that's what's the, you know, here, how you say, thieves, prisons, and shackles. Like that, you know, so it makes it hard to really get anywhere. Right? You're in a prison, you're shackled, and whatever you do have is being taken away.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Usually we say I and mine. Is there a significance why it's my and mine?
My means this, that's your identification. My hand, my head, my foot. What if that's, you know, the negative indication when somebody says something and you're saying it's wrong? You say, my foot. So, just wondering if that's a... You don't know that one yet. Probably very, very Anglo-Saxon that one.
Both my and mine are the positions.
Yeah.
But we're seeing that
no, but there's my, which is the, what I'm identifying. Because what is my false ego?
My identity.
And then there's that identity of my then has what belongs to it, which is mine. Right? So in other words, one is pointing out that you already have that, means the general principle. The other one is what you actually are identifying with. My house, my car, my, you know, this, like that, that this is me. And then there's the concept that these are my possessions. So you get both from the same thing. Right? Like that. Because generally if we say I, then we say yes, I. But the body is technically a possession. But that's the identity, you know, part of it, of the possession. And then there's the possession part of the, you know, that expands the relationship, what you have your interaction with. Because the body, that's me. You know, it's just like I go out driving my car on the back roads. So what's the dynamic? Means this side of the equation is myself and my car. And the other side of the equation that I'm interacting with is the road. Does that make sense? Yeah, you know. So, you know, the guy's out there, him, his suit, his, you know, skis, his little thingies, his goggles, his, you know, he's got it down, you know. That's his, and then there's the snow and the mountain and the trees and the rocks and the hospitals, right? You know, yes, cemetery. Yeah, it's just my cemetery. This block is mine.
Whereas these are two aspects of Sambandha, the field, mind, and Maya is more identity.
Yes, like that. So it's just, that's why it's good to, when the acharyas use all these different things, because we get more broadened perspective. Otherwise, we'll go, I, that's me. But this is not me. It's still, this is technically a mind. But that part of mind that I call me, that's called, in this case, mind. Right? Because it's my house, but then there's the concept of the house is mine, so I can enjoy it.
So one's identified.
Yeah, one's, yeah. Yes. Yes, yes, like that. Because to someone else, it's my house. Wow, you have such a nice house. Yeah, my, you know, it's identity. And then from the other side, it's I enjoy my house. So. Yeah, because it's technically the same thing. Because the only I is the soul. That's real ego. That's why the other is false ego.
Mine is just more extended.
Yes, that's all. But it's also the sense, I is how you identify yourself, mine is how you enjoy yourself. So my is that identification part of what's not us. And what we think we can enjoy. So that's what we're saying is, here's this one thing can occupy both positions.
Yes. Yeah.
Otherwise we wouldn't get that with just I and mine. It means, not that it's not there, we just don't think that much. As soon as we say the body, of course, you know, we stop thinking. We never started in the first place. That's why we're here, right? You know, so that's the. It's more subtle. That's the idea of. See, as Prabhupada's making all these points, but because he's saying it in language for the layman, he's very specific in his word choice. But we may not catch the significance of that word choice. So when we hear it from the acharyas in its technical form, then we start to get a broader understanding. Then when we read what Prabhupada says, then we see it's all there. That's why he's used that choice of words. It may be lay words, not words of philosophers, but they're very specifically chosen. Right? So then that's why I make the point. It's foolish to think that Prabhupada's speaking on a lower level. And then others are speaking on a higher level. No, he's speaking on the mastery level. We're thinking he's speaking on the has some knowledge level. And then the experts are the great, more advanced. But no, the master is beyond the expert. So the master can explain something technical very simply, so that the person who just knows something can appreciate. Well, the expert cannot. You take away all the fancy words, the expert can't talk. You know, because that's identity.
Yes.
Well, for the master, it's not identity.
Like that.
Is that? Yeah, so that's why we use the two. Because you approach the previous acharya through your acharya. So it's just a matter of, we can understand by how Prabhupada's given us the mood, and then we can see technically what they're talking about, and then Prabhupada's given us that. Is when Prabhupada said everything's in his books, means there's nothing you'll read from the acharyas that's not already there. Just we don't know they're there. Right?
Yes.
Like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Oh my Lord, persons who are bereft of the all auspicious performance of chanting and hearing about your transcendental activities are certainly unfortunate, and they are also bereft of good sense. They engage in inauspicious activities, enjoying sense gratification for a very little while. Right? Because the concept is it's about options. We think that there's plenty of facility, you know, for enjoying, and that there'll be a lot of enjoying. But actually, there's very minimal enjoying. It's only for a very short while, very little while. You know, the amount of work that's there. I mean, it's just like before the vacation, right? How much enjoyment is there? It's just like unlimited. Right? After you get back from it and reflect back, there was a moment here and there. You know, that was a good vacation.
Yes.
You know, there's some vacations that didn't quite work out at all. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what it means by very little while. But because the living entity's nature is to be happy, therefore we look forward for the next vacation. Even though after the last one we thought, well, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah,
yeah.
Padamakananda Swami was, I think, in Mombasa once. He, very young, he went, now I'm going to go on vacation. And he went there, and he was telling me, like, he went to the beach, and the sand was just like burning hot. And so he found the shade of a palm tree, and then it started raining with scorpions. And
off the palm tree.
Oh, yeah. And he was thinking, oh, this is not working. It's just like,
yeah,
never went on vacation again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Raining scorpions.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Okay. Inauspicious activities. It means the activity itself, even if it's a recommended activity in Shastra for karma or jnana, because it's not connected with the soul, technically it's inauspicious. Because it doesn't really do anything for the soul. So, and then, let alone if it's not recommended by Shastra, then it's just downright inauspicious.
So we can say aparavidya, as long as it's not connected, it's inauspicious?
It's avidya. See, technically aparavidya means that secondary knowledge is connected to the Lord. Right? So it's secondary knowledge, but it's carrying the principle, the primary knowledge, you know, of knowledge of the Lord. Then it's called aparavidya. Because para means transcendental, apara means it's not transcendental. So it's the form that it uses. But if it's not connected to the Lord, then it disconnects itself and it's called avidya. So the same knowledge can go either way. That's the thing. You see, somebody has knowledge in it and it helps them. Right? Does that make sense? Somebody, you know, a manager, let's say, gets a management book, looks at it, picks up a few nice points. You know, the service goes nicely, you know, things get more dynamic, everybody becomes more happy and Krishna conscious. So that's called aparavidya. Someone else gets into that and starts studying more and this and that, and they become more and more disconnected and everything, and get more and more involved in these kind of things, and that's called avidya. Like that. Does that make sense? So you see both examples. Like that. It's the same knowledge. That. One takes away, one brings close. Like that. The next question is why people are against such auspicious activities as chanting and hearing the glories and pastimes of the Lord, which can bring total freedom from the cares and anxieties of material existence. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verse 7. The only answer to this question is that they are unfortunate because of supernatural control due to their offensive activities performed simply for the sake of sense gratification. Right? Because they're performing an activity just for sense gratification. That will get the supernatural control of the modes of nature, which will then make them not interested.
So that's their karma?
It's just the results of their karma. Right? So that's why then you have to use more serious methods, like having festivals or harinams or book distribution, prasad distribution, right? The book, they're not going to read the book, but since they paid for the book, they're not going to throw it out, right? Like that. I mean, it's not. See, certain people will throw it out, but certain people will not throw it out. You paid for it. Why you'll throw it out? Right? Like that. So then you put it on the shelf, right? And then having it on the shelf, it'll sit there. That it has its radiating its good spiritual vibe. So then at some point either you'll look at it or your children will look at it, some guests will look at it. You have ones, I've heard of that, where the father bought the book, who knows, God only knows when. But it was only their son picked it up and looked at it. You know, so it had been sitting there 20, 30 years and then, you know, like that. So like that, prasad distribution, you get benefit, they don't know. Like that. So they hear the holy name, they see the festival. So we may say, no, but they don't like. They'll never like. This is said here. They're unfortunate. So we're going to go by, we should tiptoe around their being controlled by the modes of nature. The point is someone's sick, you know. He doesn't like it, right? You know, the guy's choking, right? Is he going to like the tracheotomy? Is he going to like that?
No.
You're going to take a pen and stick it through his throat. Is he going to like that? No, but if you don't, he dies. So that's just the way it works. You know, you try to do it in as pleasant way as possible. You know, you point out to him, no, but this is not a Bic pen. This is a Mont Blanc pen. Oh, of course. You know?
Distracted.
Yeah, so whatever it is. So. Does that make sense? Yeah. Brahma continues to describe the unfortunate situation of the non-devotees. Oh, great actor, my lord, all these poor creatures are constantly perplexed by hunger, thirst, severe cold, secretion, and bile, attacked by coughing winter. Coughing winter, that's an interesting way to say it. Blasting summer, okay. Coughing winter, blasting summer, rains, and many other disturbing elements. And overwhelmed by strong sex urges and indefatigable anger. Right? The anger just doesn't go away. It's always angry. I take pity on, or especially the older you get, the more the anger, like, you know, becomes more mature. Like that. You take it on as a service, you know, it's your service to, you know, be angry. Yeah. I take pity on them, and I am very much aggrieved for them. Such non-devotees engage their senses in very troublesome and extensive work. And they suffer insomnia at night because their intelligence constantly breaks their sleep with various mental speculations. Right? It means they could do it this way, that way. So they can't sleep. You know, that means the point is if you are a materialist, right? Eating, sleeping, mating defense. So sleeping, you can't sleep because you're making arrangements for your material life. You know, so then they drop off one of them. And if you can't sleep, the other ones don't seem to work as good. You know? Like that. Yes?
This is more of a mind speaking.
Yeah.
Usually we think that he is the most pious living entity.
So you could take this as horse's mouth here. If he's saying that this is all useless, then... See, that's the point. It's from the top down. It's just like, if you want to talk about material, how it functions and that, hearing from him, you'd have to take him as authority, right? Right? So the Shastras always do. It's just like, if you want to know the nature of women, who should you hear it from?
Ladies.
Yes. Because if you hear it from the men, you'll just say, oh, that's their opinion. But if you hear it from Brahma here, then you know, okay, this is how it functions. Because he's making it. Right?
Pretty authoritative.
Yeah, no, it's pretty authoritative. Like that. Coughing winter, blasting summer. That's really good. Coughing winter. Attacked by coughing winter, right? Because it just creeps in through the crack in the window or, you know, something. Yeah.
You always get that extra chatter out 2 days too late.
Hmm? Yeah.
You always get that extra chatter out 2 days too late.
Yeah, yeah. They are frustrated in all their various plans by supernatural power. Even like supernatural because it's beyond their nature. It means we know it's the modes of nature. It's not something subtle that sits there and, you know, jumps out at you from behind the bush or something like that. Or, you know, when you're taking a shower, right? That's always the popular one, right? You know? Yeah. Right? So here it's that supernatural means it's beyond our power. So therefore it's supernatural. Because we take natural whatever we can do.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Even great sages, if they are against your transcendental topics, must rotate in this material world. Okay. So even being a sage, being renounced, having knowledge won't save you from this. The only thing that will save you is you're a servant of the Lord. You're interested in the topics about the Lord. You're willing to hear that, discuss that. Then... you could be freed. But until then, it won't happen. So it's not about... In other words, the life of the saintly person, that's in support of hearing and chanting. Right? Because that's the main thing. These other things are things that help. Right?
Yes.
If you're controlling the senses, right, then there's less material distraction.
Yes.
Right? And then more opportunity to think about the Lord, discuss about the Lord. That's the whole point.
Can we say that the word perplexed here is significant because the devotee still may encounter these things but are not identifying with them? So,
yes, constantly perplexed because, yes, means this is, he's specifically talking about the non-devotees. But when we take up devotional service, we'll still have an effect of this from previous, right? But it's only because of our consciousness is still there, right? Because technically the reaction is gone, but because we still think that way, therefore then the Lord reciprocates according to how we think. So in that way you can say, this is happening to me because of my karma. But that karma means the my mentality that's generated. It's not because I have pious and impious activities that are there that therefore, according to the laws of nature, are giving me trouble. Because that's gone when you take up the chanting process. Right? So we're working on Krishna karma. So whatever is according to our mentality, our consciousness, Krishna reciprocates with that. Right? Depending upon how we see him. Either as the universal form, as Paramatma, or as Bhagavan, depending on how we see him. Is that something? Yeah? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the position of the great sages devoid of bhakti in his commentary to verse 10. One should not say that material existence, caused by ignorance, will be destroyed by jnana, because even jnanis devoid of bhakti continue in the material world. The sages described in this verse, averse to your association, continue in this world. What types of sages are these? They have disturbed senses engaged during the day. They have enjoyable objects bestowed to them by karma. Right. So they're still going to, even though they've reduced it down, still whatever they have is something to enjoy. Let's say we have a rich man and a poor man. Right? Now the poor man, does he not make his endeavor to enjoy? Right? And he has his moments. Just like the rich man, he has his moments. So the whole point is even the sage reduces it down, still because he's not connected to the Lord, there'll still be that aspect of sense gratification. So he's performed jnana, the activities of jnana, because of that renunciation he gets the results, which will come in the form of karma. So he'll have facility. Right? So whatever little bit it is, still it's sense enjoyment. Because it's not connected to the Lord. Right? Because the ignorance is caused by ignorance that they still have. Even if they get rid of the ignorance connected with the body, the mind, and the words, they still have the ignorance connected with the lingershire of I am the controller and enjoyer. And not the lingershire, the causal, karnashire. Yes. Does that make sense? So they still continue material existence, even though it's on a higher level. Right? They may be the great sages, but they'll still continue because they still have that identification. Only when we give that up and we identify I'm servant of Krishna, then you can actually go beyond. So that's why even being a great sage, if a great sage is going to do that, be caught up in some cycle of birth and death, so we don't even have to mention the karmis, right? That's automatic. Even the greatly pious ones, they're automatically going to be here. Yeah, that's yes.
Sense gratification is starting from the mind.
Yes, it's just sense gratification is what you think is going to be good.
Yes.
Right, and then if it happens the way you have speculated, then that's called happiness. If it turns out not the way you thought, you don't call that happiness. Right? Even though, in another case, someone else would call that happiness. It's just, if I thought it should go this way, just like, let's say, a person's hungry. If they get anything to eat, no matter what it is, they're happy. Because they wanted something to eat. Right? So it's generic. But let's say someone wants something specific to eat. If he doesn't get that, he gets something else, he's unhappy. Right? So that's the whole point, is we think is that no, there actually is a tangible happiness. But the tangible is not real. It's about what we say is happiness.
Is that related to our upadis?
Yes, our upadis. How we identify, because that's how we're going to accept. Right? For someone else, we would say, oh, this is very nice. You know, for someone else, but for ourselves, we may be thinking, oh, this is not good. Does that make sense? Like that.
But does actual happiness exist? There's a principle of phenomena.
Yes. So that's what the soul is thinking is here. But it's only there. So in connection with the Lord, there's actual happiness. So that's why we're striving for it. So there's actual happiness, there's actual existence. Mm-hmm. So the two illusions that the living entity has is that this material world is eternal and full of happiness. That's why Dukkhalaya Mashashvatam. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that it's always pointed out, that's why they always point on these two things. Yes. Misery and temporary. Right? You don't have to talk about activity. Because material activity will get temporary and unhappy. Eternal activity will get eternal and happy. Because you're going to act according to how you think and feel. Right? So your willing is according to your thinking and feeling. So if you're thinking and feeling spiritual, the action will be spiritual, results will be spiritual. If you're thinking and feeling are material, the action will be material, the results will be material. So that's the whole point, is no one's doing anything that's not because they're soul. We tend to think the devotees are you know, acting on the platform of the soul, and the karmis aren't. But the karmis are also. But it's just their dealing in that level is not scientific. Right? Because they are the soul, they are active, they exist, they have an identity, they want to be happy. But they, due to ignorance, they don't know how to do that. So that's why, even though there's this thing of, you know, how you say, what was it? Happiness for a moment, or what was it?
Very short time. Like sense gratification for a very little while.
Yeah, for a very little while. Why? Because the soul understands that there is happiness. So they're trying to get that happiness. But they're trying to get it through the material energy. That's why it's. So the knowledge of the soul isn't gone. It's covered. So we just have to come and revive that. Remind them of it. It's not that we have to put this knowledge in. You're uncovering the knowledge that's already there. Right? So all this knowledge that we're learning, it's already there. It's just it's covered by various doubts and misgivings. You know, ignorance and all kinds of other things. But as we go, then it slowly becomes uncovered. So the soul at any time can take advantage of this spiritual knowledge, but as mentioned before, because of supernatural control due to their offensive activities performed simply for the sake of sense gratification, they're not interested. Does that make sense?
So we're trying to destroy the bodies.
Yes, that's why we start off where we're not the body, we're the soul, servant of God. Right?
Because then there is a question comes, the Divya Gyan Hrida Prakashita, what does it mean that the spiritual master, you know, he puts the transcendental knowledge within the heart of a disciple?
Yeah, it means it's revealing. Yeah, it means he's the instrument for it being revealed. But it's only going to be revealed if you go through the spiritual master. In other words, Krishna is going to reveal it, but he's only going to reveal it if you please him. And he's only pleased if you please the spiritual master. Because we can't see Krishna, we can see the spiritual master. We please the spiritual master, then that's as close as we can get. So Krishna's saying, you do that, then he's pleased. Right? So this idea, we make a duality between the spiritual master and Krishna. You know, like the thing comes up. Oh no, but why they're offering obeisance to spiritual master in front of the deities, that's offensive. Since when is it offensive? You're offering obeisance as the God in front of God. How is that offensive? You know what I'm saying? You respect Balaram in front of Krishna, does Krishna get down out of shape? Hey, wait a minute, I'm the original here. You know, like that, you know.
So due to ignorance, whereas there's difference, we see oneness, and then whereas the oneness...
Oneness, we see difference. Yeah, that's ignorance. We get it all backwards. Yeah. That's the one thing you can be assured of. You know, if you want to feel confident in that, you can know that the ignorance has got everything backwards. Right? So, and then in the same way as you just reverse it, then they say, voila.
Voila.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know how to say these things. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I have very old and very unhappy mother.
Very old and very unhappy mother. And is there a connection between the old and the happy?
Maybe, yes, but how to connect your connection?
Prashad, kirtan, like that. And if she's interested in understanding why, then you explain. And if she's not, just be nice. You know, but just as much as these others that you can put in as possible. You know, find some nice kirtan that she likes. Put it always in the background. Always everything's prashad. Be pleasant. She gets attached to the devotees. You know, it doesn't know what's happening, so it's a gyata sukriti. But if there's an interest, then you can explain exactly. Because sometimes they want to know where they're going, what's going to happen. Then you explain. You know, whatever they want. And when they don't, you just leave it. Because sometimes they're interested, sometimes not. You know, it's they're interested, but then it gets too scary, and they're interested, and get, you know, it's like that. Okay. You had something?
I was going to say, is it like we're misplaced and we don't know we're misplaced?
Yes, yes. Means we're in the material world, but we think we're still in the spiritual world.
We miss the spiritual world.
We want to be like Krishna and enjoy his energy. So we get that idea in the spiritual world. So we think we're in the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? Let's say there's a very nice mode of goodness experience. People will call that spiritual. Just because they're so used to ignorance and passion. You know? They say that's spiritual. You know, someone's nice. That was spiritual, you know. Does that make sense? Someone has a sense of, you know, care for everybody. They're spiritual. You know. That's because gross sense gratification, you know, absolute total anamoya is like our, you know, how you say, benchmark. You know. So if someone's beyond that, then that's spiritual. Right? You know, so. Yeah. So that's the... is that okay? Yes.
This is a little bit while back, but I was just thinking how Krishna says austerity of the mind is satisfaction.
Yes.
You were saying about how we think happiness is what we create in our minds.
Yes.
How important that is for devotees to practice satisfaction.
Yes.
And austerity.
Yes, yes. Because that you see is that's a means we look at it generally we take these things from the social point of view. Like, you know, the duties as mentioned in Prithu Maharaj. There Prabhupada mentions that the feminine duty is chastity and satisfaction. But that's all that's being explained for us. Right? But in that generic sense, you have to bring it in from another angle. Because we identify so strongly with the masculine and feminine of this world that we'll say it either, you know, it either doesn't apply to me because I'm masculine, or feminine, that's a social thing. Right? But actually, it's that chastity means connection to Krishna. Right? So Krishna, the Guru, the Vaishnavas, that's the thing. And satisfaction is whatever the situation, that's what we have to do. So that's the principle. Right? Right? And yeah. So if that's there, then it functions, because we're energy, so. Yeah. Yes?
I've heard an interesting definition of that variety is the mother of enjoyment and satisfaction is the father.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because if you're satisfied, you can enjoy. Because if you're not satisfied, you can't really enjoy, because you're always immediately speculating. You know? Yeah. Yeah, because if you're satisfied, you're either in the mode of goodness or you're in the present. So whatever's happening will be nice. But if you're in the mode of passion or ignorance, then even you're in a nice situation, you're thinking in the future or past. So you're in a situation comparing it to the past or thinking about how something else... would... That's interesting, nice.
Okay, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur summarizes verses 7 to 10 as follows. Three types of persons trapped in the material world are described. The karmi, addicted to sin, described in verse 7. The fool, bewildered by hunger and thirst, described in verse 8. And the jnani, described in verse 10. Right, so the karmi, I guess, addicted to sin, and then the fool who can't even get that together, right? So he's hungry and thirsty. Yeah, and the jnani.
Poor guys.
Yeah, so that's funny. Okay, verses 11 through 13. Description of the Lord's reciprocation. In verses 11 through 13, Brahma says that even if one takes shelter of the Lord to pacify his material desires, that is far superior to approaching the demigods for material gain. Because then you're going to actually the root.
Yes.
You're approaching the Lord, so that's the reality. The unfortunate part is approaching the Lord and only asking for material gain. That's foolish. Prabhupada gives the example. You go to a millionaire and you ask him for, you know, 2 paisa.
Yes.
Right? That's foolish. You can get so much more, right? You know, so then you ask for 2 paisa, then what's the...
Yes.
Nowadays, 2 paisa doesn't even really mean much. So you might have to up it to 10 paisa. Or something. I mean, now it's coins. You got 10 rupee coins.
Yeah.
I just saw them yesterday. You know, I gave a, you know, a bigger note. I gave a 100 rupee note, and I got back all these 10 rupee coins, and I was not very happy. Okay, coins. They're very heavy. What do you do? Brahma says further. Oh my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing. Shrute kshita pato. And thus their hearts become cleansed. And you take your seat there. Yeah, I'm always wondering why it's not obvious, but it's just like I said, suit. You know, if I said, yeah, suit. What would you think?
Instruction.
Yeah, but I was saying sit, but not so expertly. You understand?
No.
You didn't catch it. You caught it?
No.
No, I was just saying my pronunciation of French, then he said, you know, well, what are you talking about? Because it's so far off that it's not... Because we're thinking, what's the big deal? You know, but it's no, just that little bit, and it means something else totally different. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I said, you say something like voila, and I've just insulted his mother.
What do you mean, voila?
Yes.
Yeah. Voila.
Yes. And thus their hearts become cleansed, and you take your seat there. Right? So by hearing, then the Lord takes his seat there. He's pleased. Their hearts become cleansed. By hearing, then the heart becomes clean. Because the Lord being the supreme clean, then he's, you know. Yeah. So he naturally, wherever he is, it's clean.
Yeah.
So then he's clean by hearing and chanting. Then he's there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. Right? So the particular eternal form of transcendence, right? How they think of you. So it's about reciprocation again. Right? How you think of Krishna, that's how he reciprocates. So that's why those who think of him in fear, that's how he reciprocates.
Yes.
Right? God is fear. So then, therefore, then they do something they know is not right. Then they're fearful. Right? So that's the whole. Yes.
I've heard this used in the following way. I like pants and wearing pants. So I think if Krishna wearing pants is going to manifest to me a form where he's wearing pants.
And where is that place going to be? Because it's not the spiritual world. Right? Only if you apply modern academic speculative logic, then you can come up with, well, it doesn't say, because they're not well read. You know what I'm saying? Bless their souls, but how much of the Vedic literature they read. Right? So, therefore, then they'll come up with these speculative ideas, and by that speculative ideas, they think, but the point is, why should Krishna come to you in the form of pants? Right? Now, Krishna is the universal form. So he'll come to you as the universal form, as that pair of pants. So now, you're walking down the street, right? And as you turn the corner, then there's these big, huge windows, right? And there's that mannequin in there. Is that said right? More. Right? And it's wearing pants. And are you attracted? Yes, that's why you go in and buy that pair of pants. So that means the universal form did come to you as a pair of pants. But that's as far as you're going to get. You're not going to get the transcendental form, because there he wears pitambar. He doesn't wear a pair of pants. And if you said, yellow pants? No. You know what I'm saying? So, why pants? Is that so pious? You know? The point is the living entity, Prabhupada explains in the previous chapter, in the purport, that every living entity is only interacting with God. There is no such thing as not interacting with the Lord. But he's coming in the form of these material energy that we're dealing with. So because we see him in that way, he reciprocates in that way. So yes, God will come to you as a pair of pants. But within the material form. Because is it about Krishna or is it about a pair of pants? That's the whole thing. It's always got to be Krishna in a pair of pants. Krishna eating a burger or something. You know, it's like, you know.
Krishna.
Huh?
Krishna.
Yeah, so it's always about me. So then, because it's about us, then it will happen. What is that us? That us is material, because we're not that pair of pants. We're not that Western food. You could say, well, we're not the Indian food either. Yeah, but the point is Indian food is aparavidya. It's in pursuance of the original, which means it's cooked in bhakti. So then you say, well, we can cook the Western in bhakti, but that's the point. They're cooking Western with bhakti. They're not cooking with bhakti. So it's always mixed. So because it's mixed, therefore you'll get a mixed result. So yes, he will come to you in a pair of pants. But not in Braj. You know, here in the material world. That's why you like your pants. Because Krishna is the pants. Otherwise, why would you like pants? You know, they're just dead matter. What's the soul got to do with pants? Because Krishna's entered it as the universal form. That's why it's attractive. So as Prajumna, you think the pants are nice. That's all. So the soul, every soul is only interacting with the Lord. But because he thinks it's the pants, that's why he's an illusion. Like that. When he understands it's the person, that's when you get beyond. So it's about the person. So it's not a matter of what. The point is why does Krishna have to come in pants? Just because we're attached to our material attachment, which was what was back there? What was that one? Their material attachments and desires are main thieves. So it's just stealing away their opportunities for Krishna consciousness. But, you know, they're doing devotional service, so the progress is there.
But, you know, as it said, if you're attached, Prabhupada said, if you're attached to one gulab jamun or rasgula, you'll stay in the material world. So let alone a pair of pants. Pants are a lot bigger than a gulab jamun. Right? So, yeah? Sorry?
Defined it by size?
That's what we're looking at here. So, but now the pants. What kind of pants? Just any old pants? It's got to be the right kind of pants, you know. Does it have pleats or not pleats? Are there cuffs or no cuffs? You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, are there pockets or no pockets? You know, does it have belt loops, not belt loops? Is the belt, does it have to be held up with a pair of, with a belt, or is just the belt loops are there just for looks? You know, does it have a coin pocket? You know, does it have a phone pocket? Does it have cargo veto pockets? You know, are the knees articulated or not? You know, it says, you know, like that. What are they made out of? What is the fabric? So we could go on and on and about this. So I could come up with probably 100 kinds of pants that they would not want to see. Like that. They have a very specific pair of pants. And it's probably not Levi's 501. No, that would be a little too... Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They're wearing the stuff that they think is fashion. Does that make sense? Yeah. No, it doesn't.
No, that's true.
Nothing, yes.
Maharaj, for the pants, you know, we see that in many temples, we, in the evening time for dressing Krishna, we put a pajama.
Pajama? What does that mean, pajama?
It's like a pan, you know?
No, but is it a dhoti put on his pants?
No. It's like a pant trouser.
But full length.
Full means yes, because we scratch, you know.
No, but I say it's down to the knee. Oh, I see. But if you're putting that on with the big shirt, though, it generally goes with the big kurta. So that's one style that's used. Yeah, but it goes with the kurta.
Yes, true.
And it goes together. You know, therefore, pie jama. The jama is the shirt. You know what I'm saying? It's an Indian fashion. It's called pyjama.
Yes, yes.
Like that. And then when it gets, the British pick it up, then it becomes pajamas.
Pajamas.
Huh? Huh? Jammies, yeah, okay. So they only were interested in the bottom, right? Because then you were
PJs,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, jammies, okay. Yeah, but then you would have to wear the big, huge, baggy T-shirt, right? Okay. I just say. Yeah. But the point is that they go together. But that's there, but it's still within the Vedic fashion. But they're saying no, he's gonna show up and dress casuals or something like that.
A pair of slacks.
A pair of slacks. Yeah.
Three-piece suit.
Yeah, three-piece suit. No, these guys are not up to that kind of standard. No. Yeah, what if he shows up in a, you know, pair of, you know, bright green silk pants?
With jewelry around the head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's too far beyond these guys. That's you know.
That would be Indian.
No, it would be preppy. But you have to probably be about 50 to pull it off. And rich. You know, so says so the whole thing is you have that, but then that's they're taking from these forms that they see they use in India, like Radha Raman wears little shorts and stuff like that. You're following these things that are traditions that are followed, but they go with something else. So the shorts, then that goes with the cheddar, but the tight long pants that goes with the big shirt, but the light shirt generally. Less is cold than you use the heavy. So they go together, you know. But as soon as you go outside of that, then it loses the flavor. So you do have those aspects, but it's that kind. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll break here for a few minutes. Thank you. So Jiva Goswami comments in Bhagavat Sandarbha Anucheda 40 as follows. In the above verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.11, Lord Brahma explains that the personality of Godhead appears in the forms of his many different incarnations according to the different ways in which the devotees approach him. In this verse, the word pranayase means you manifest. Okay, the answer is going to come up of anthropomorphism to your previous question. Pranayase means you manifest. We may note that by saying shrutekshita pata, the devotees learn about the Lord by hearing the bona fide descriptions of him in the Vedic literatures. Okay, Brahma confirms the reality of the Supreme Lord's transcendental forms. In other words, the Lord's forms are not the product of the meditator's imagination. They actually exist. Footnote 12. This is an argument against the theory of anthropomorphism. From Greek, anthropos, human, and morphe, shape. This notion is famously summed up by the Greek philosopher Xenophanes, 570 to 480 BCE. What's the E?
It's either BC or CE, but somehow they've been combined all
together. It's very...
It's really...
C before Christ, CE, common era.
Before the era.
Before Christ, common era? Before the Christ,
era. Imagine before common era.
Oh, could be. Before common era.
Uncommon.
And after common era. Oh, so it's BC, E, and CE.
Yeah.
Okay. I prefer the BC and AD.
Yeah, they tried to make it non-religious. Nothing to do with Christ.
Yeah. Why that date? Why is that the common date then? But if okay, so this is what Xenophanes, or that's, how do you say his name? How do you say his name? This one at the bottom of the page. Xenophanes. Okay. Very different, right? Xenophanes. Okay. Okay, so now we're going to hear about Xenophanes, okay? But if cattle and horses and lions had hands or could paint with their hands and create works such as men do, horses like horses and cattle like cattle also would depict the gods' shapes and make their bodies of such a sort as they form, as the form they themselves have. Ethiopians say that their gods are snub-nosed and black. Thracians say that they are pale and red-haired. However, the greatest God resembles man neither in form nor in mind. Right? So that's... How did you say that? Xenophanes. Oh, I see. Just no emphasis. Xenophanes. Yeah, I don't know how this emphasis comes in as English. They seem to really make a mess of things.
They tend to stress things that shouldn't be stressed.
Yes. In all categories,
yeah,
right?
All
yeah, Xenophanes. Okay. So this is defeated by the words shrutekshita pato. The forms of the Lord are described by the great authorities in the Vedas and are not imagined by the worshippers according to their mundane taste. So in other words, this idea, well, God will appear to me in pants, that's a mundane taste. So that he should appear that way, that's actually anthropomorphism. Because they think, this is what I think God should be like, so that's how he should appear. When in reality, there's the real shapes of the Lord, and then we develop love for him. It's not that we'll only love God if he appears in this way. Right? That's a very, it means we could say that, oh no, but this is more advanced because we're just relaxed than that. No, but if I say, I'll only love my friend if he acts in this way or looks in this way. I'll only have friends if they look like this. Right? We would say that they're very self-centered. Very, very backwards. Right? But the people who are saying this,
many times they think that they're the most democratic and forward, you know, moving, forward thinking. So that's the mode of ignorance. It reverses things so badly. Right? Because it's about, no, Krishna already looks the way he looks. Now, of those unlimited forms, which one you like, he'll appear to you in that form. But it's not that we make up the form, because what are we making it up? We're making it up from the material energy. Right? So he could appear that way, but that's called the universal form. And it didn't work out so good for Arjuna, so it won't work out for us. You know?
Thousands of pants.
Thousands of pants. Thousands of shirts. Thousands of ties. Unlimited cufflinks. Can you imagine tying your shoes? No.
Yeah. So can we say that the Lord forms come first, and then our attraction to it, and they
yes.
just say the opposite first?
Come yes, they're saying is that as we think, that's how God will appear. But it's actually is no, how God is, we'll become attracted by Him. So if we're in the purified state with devotion, then we appreciate the forms that are there. Now that particular devotion matches a particular form. Because you can't have devotion outside of what's defined by devotion. Nectar devotion defines how devotion works. So if you're not functioning in pure devotion, free from karma and jnana, then how is Krishna going to manifest to that? So those aspects you appreciate maybe his sweetness or his beauty, so we'll appreciate those things from the Lord. But the actual directly seeing the form is going to be a form based on actual devotion, not mixed devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not going to happen.
So can we say that Prahlad appreciated the power, that's why he came. He is the most powerful. But the shape, he couldn't have imagined this kind of shape.
Yes, he wasn't thinking of that shape. No, because the point is the shape matches the mood. Right, so matches the mood. So we're saying, okay, God in pants. What's the mood?
Cowboy.
What's the mood of God in pants?
Cowboy.
Cowboy.
Cowboy. Yeah.
Cowboy with the.
You know. Depends on the pants.
Depends on the pants.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got the slick ones or shooting the cuff, right? Right. From the, Yes.
So basically what they say Atmavan Manyate Jagat. This
yes.
is the same.
Yes, how they're thinking. So this is very much the problem, because like we'll think, okay, when we're around a while, then we become looking old. So God's been around the longest, so he looks the oldest,
yes.
right, you know.
Yes.
Though they didn't quite put enough wrinkles on him, but, you know.
That's because he's God.
Oh, okay. 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 So he ages.
He has the best lotion.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He ages in the most dignified way. Right, you know, so.
He matures.
Yes. So like that, what does he imagine? They get older. And that's why the point's been made is that Advaitacharya, him having a beard, is not because he's, by the modes of nature, he's old, so he has a beard. He just wants for the pastime to have a beard. Therefore he has one. Because otherwise, you know, he's a 16, you know, 16, the youth of 16, so why does he need a beard? But it's for fun, then he has a beard. Like that.
And it's white.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In that way, then, also in the community, people would respect him. Because otherwise, if you always look like a boy, then the smartest have a tendency to think you're a kid. And they're older, they're more wise. So this way, then, he's got a beard, and so then they can't say anything.
Your argument is invalid.
Yes. I got the beard.
Yes.
So. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So this anthropomorphic goes a lot more than just mythology.
Yeah.
It goes into our idea of what God should be like.
Yes.
No, God is who He is. That's His point. He makes that point very strongly. Yes.
Do we agree with single eyes?
No, this is his philosophy. Means this is what anthropomorphism is then perfectly summed up by Xenophanes. Xenophanes. Oh yeah, because I put an emphasis. Xenophanes. There's no emphasis. Xenophanes. Like that. It actually comes out as more. It's quite a pleasant language. Right? As soon as you drop all the that in the nasal tone, then it becomes good. Yeah.
Only English is
difficult. Yeah, no, English is the weirdest language. But somehow or another, it's taking over. Yeah. It's just like the mix of everything. Because the other ones, then you have to have some lineage to be able to say it nicely. Okay. Who are the Thracians?
From Thrace.
And where is Thrace? It's after two?
I think it's one of the Greek.
Oh, it's one of the Greek. Oh, really? So they're red-haired. They must be a wild bunch. Yeah. Thracians are from Greece. They're kind of Greek. But they have red hair. Oh. Either that or they liked red hair. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments on the same verse. The statement here that the Lord manifests himself before the devotee in the form in which the devotee likes to worship him indicates that the Lord becomes subordinate to the desire of the devotee, so much so that he manifests his particular form as the devotee demands. But it's still his form.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's not... Yeah. Yeah. The demand of the devotee is satisfied by the Lord because he is pliable in terms of the transcendental loving service of the devotee. Right? So when you have that pure love... Right? Free from karma and jnana, that form he'll come as. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Ye tamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. We should note, however, that the Lord is never the order supplier of the devotee. That's the other side. That he has to, like this. Or, you know. Here in this verse it is particularly mentioned. Tvam bhakti yoga pari bhavita. This indicates the efficiency achieved through execution of mature devotional service, or prema, love of Godhead. This state of prema is achieved by the gradual process of development from faith to love. On faith, one associates with bona fide devotees, and by such association, one can become engaged in bona fide devotional service, which includes proper initiation and the execution of the primary devotional duties prescribed in the revealed scriptures. This is clearly indicated herein by the words shutekshita. The shutekshita path is to hear from the bona fide devotees who are conversant with Vedic wisdom, free from mundane sentiment. Right? So by mundane sentiment, our attachments are there. We work with them attachments. You know, so we're not saying you can't wear pants and do devotional service. We're saying is that's there because of an attachment. And then with time that attachment goes. It doesn't mean that one's still not wearing pants. But one's not wearing it because of attachment. All right? And if you're not attached to it, then therefore you're not expecting that God will be wearing them either. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. By this bona fide hearing process, the neophyte devotee becomes cleansed of all material rubbish, and thus he becomes attached to one of the many transcendental forms of the Lord, as described in the Vedas. So in other words, you become attached to the forms that are described in the Vedas. Not that as you imagine in your mind, the Lord takes that. Otherwise, then that's the point. Human morphe shape. He takes on the shape that you imagine. Right?
So there seems to be a mix going on, that there's acceptance of the form of Krishna as described in the Vedas, but then onto that is the desire for the pants or whatever.
I think they have what do you call it? You can get apps on your iPad to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
I think generally it's like Barbie or somebody. You know, some of those funny little Powder Puff Girls or, you know, stuff like that.
So is it
appears
to be?
It's a mix, yeah. Well, that's the point, mixed devotional service. There's an idea to serve Krishna and become devoted to Krishna, but then there's still an identity with the material condition. So when that becomes purified, then you get attached to the form of the Lord as He is. Because otherwise, who are you going to follow? Right? Because you see the acharyas, when they talk about Krishna, how he's dressed, how he's wearing, how he's interacting, then that's the Krishna we want to know. So if we're following them, we wouldn't want to know, so who's going to be with this Krishna? Yeah, so then how is it going to work? How's that parampara system going to function? Right. So it's not about a personal interaction, it's about a particular material identity. Like that. All it is that I have these attachments, and I found a way, you know, seemingly through philosophy, to make my attachments seem actually spiritual. So now no one can bother me because it's actually spiritual. But they're just fooling themselves. Maya is very clever. So she tricks them. Otherwise, why is there that third stage of anartha nivritti? Then is you know, should I do it this way or should I do it? I can engage all of my attachments in the Lord's Krishna service, but at the same time, shastras recommend renunciation. So oscillating between these, why is that there? Yeah, beautiful kalpa. So then, that aspect is there, but that's the third. So it's technically, once you get over that, then you're halfway through. So that's below half. So it's something that has to be dealt with. Something that has to be removed.
Is it until all these upadis are gone, remains some tendency towards anthropomorphism, or if we just
you could say it's one of the methods. You have that, you have impersonalism, you have, you know, you have karma, you have all these different things. God's the order supplier. Yeah. Like that. So you have all these different ways to be distracted by karma and jnana. So this is just a unique feature of karma, you know, but they're trying to use yon to cover it up. That's all. You know, that's the standard thing, is that in the assembly of religious persons, if you have a material attachment, you try to use religion to justify it. Okay. That's all. It's standard. You don't function within your own sphere, because it's not going to fly. You have to use a higher sphere to try to prove it. I mean, amongst the common general, you don't have to. But amongst those who have a more developed perception, then you have to try to pervert that perception to establish your lower level of consciousness.
So you're utilizing dharma in support of nitya.
Yes. You're trying to say we're not the body, or even fire, moksha. You know, we're not the body, so it doesn't matter. If we're not the body, it doesn't matter, then what's so important about pants? You know what I'm saying? If we're not the body, it doesn't matter, then why pants? You know, why not a kimono? You know, Africans got some cool shirts. Why not those? You know, they even get a hat along with it, right? You know, they don't got a hat, you know. They just got a... You know what I'm saying? Or, I forget what's the name. I can't remember. You know, or why don't we go the way of the Brazilians, right? You know, they go out into the jungle with nothing on. You know, so you say, you know, why not that? You know, that's really not the body, right? You know. You know, so what I'm saying is they use the philosophy just to support their own mundane perspective, which is unnecessary. We can say Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would have people in suits and this and that. Yes, because of who he was talking to. But here, it's their own attachment. Because otherwise, let's say you're in India. Who in India do you have to wear pants for? Nobody. Not one person. But they'll still wear pants here. And why do you have to wear pants in the West? Because it's the West, this is not India. So when you're in India, then you should just still be wearing a dhoti if you follow your philosophy purely. So that's where it falls apart. So it's not about the West. It's not. It's about their attachments.
Even in the West, people appreciate the devotees.
Yeah, of course.
They don't know to hang up with it.
No. Like I mentioned, devotees were telling me, I forget, in the 80s, there was 6 months when dhotis were in fashion amongst the Karmis, the Italians. You know, they're the sewn ones. You just put them on like pants. But dhotis were in fashion for 6 months. You know, and Italians are known for their fashion sense, so. You know, probably if the French had done it, it would have caught on. Right? It would have made it to New York, but, you know, it's Paris, then Milan, right? Not Milan, then Paris, right? So. Right. You don't hear something just Milan. It's Paris, Milan, New York, right? You know, like that. Not just Milan, right? Okay. Huh? Calcutta, yeah. Milan, Calcutta. Milan, not a dweeb. Yeah, that would be. Yeah. Okay. This attachment of the. Okay. Did we read that? No, we didn't. This attachment of the devotee to a particular form of the Lord is due to natural inclination. Natural means the soul, not the conditioning, right? Does that make sense? Because the pants we're talking about is conditioning. Right? So whatever is there, that's conditioning. So Krishna addresses that. We're able to engage all of that. But it's ultimately not about that. But when it's not about that, it means it disappears. Not that, see, now it's okay. Right? Each living entity is originally attached to a particular type of transcendental service because he is eternally the servitor of the Lord. Right? So that's original, the natural service. Just like, let's say, you have a rich businessman, right, who has a very large corporation. So what's the natural duty of the son? He'll take over that business. Let's say the father is a farmer. Son becomes a farmer. So we're on the transcendental platform. We have our natural nature. It's not whether we do it or not. Right? You know, the son can decide to become a bohemian or what do you call those guys? They blow up everything and say they're doing some good. Huh? Anarchist, right, yeah. Hack everything, blow up everything, right, yeah. Okay. Lord Chaitanya says that the living entity is eternally a servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Therefore, every living entity has a particular type of service, relationship with the Lord eternally. It means it's already there. It's just a matter of awakening what is there. But there's no point in getting down to the detail of what that service is unless we have the service attitude. Right? If you have a service attitude, any service can be performed. We don't have a service attitude, then even we have the service, we won't perform it. Right, so that's why the first thing, Shravana Dasa, means hearing about and what's the attitude. Right? Varna Dasa is now adjusting to the specific of the service. Right? Because unless you have the service attitude in Shravana Dasa, then where's the meaning of Varna Dasa? Yes.
So that means that Mahaprabhu saying Gopi Bhartur Kamala Yor Dasa Dasa Amadas, that we inherently connected to Krishna.
Yes.
Gopinath.
He's Gopinath. Because, in other words, the surrender and mood of the gopis, that service, that's the attitude we should develop. Now, whether one has the service of a gopi or not, that's another thing. Because the point is it's about that full surrender. That's the important point. Because that's the mood of Braj. Right? That's the mood of Braj. So that's just the general point, is that, you know, one can say, well, the statement's no, but we, you know, we're all supposed to be, you know, gopis. But the point is what's the meaning of being a gopi if you don't have the service attitude? Right? Like saying the girl's going to be married, yes, but if now she's young, it's not about, I'm going to be married, I can do what I like. No, it's about preparing yourself. So the point is if you're not trained, then what's the meaning of marriage? So the same way is, if you don't have a service attitude in the mood of the residents of Braj, then what is the meaning of being a gopi or a cowherd boy or whatever? It doesn't have any meaning because you won't be able to do it. The form is a manifestation of the mood. Right? So the mood is first, then the form. So that's why the mood is the first thing. That pure, unalloyed love and devotion. Then the second thing is what specific form you have. So that's why you don't have any problem discussing those aspects and the ekadas bhava and all these things. But the point is, unless you have the mood, what's the meaning? You know, it's like the kid is there, you know, he's a little uncomfortable with his homework, you know? And then his mother explains to him, he says, you know, you have this homework. He says, you know, that's just in preparation. When you get big, you know, like your father, you're going to be running this, you know, big corporation and all that. There's going to be paperwork. There's going to be emails. There's going to be stuff that you have to look over and that for the company. So if you don't practice now, he says, how are you going to do that when you get big? Right? And then he sees the importance of doing his homework. Even though technically he's wondering, what does the homework got to do with running a company? Right? But the principle is there. If he can't focus on his homework, he can't focus on his other work. Out of attachment, yes. But then the problem is that if it's only attachment that's driving him, then he's going to make mistakes. Because mistake means... attachment means mistake. So only if there's detachment can you make the right decision. So that means it has to be based on the service attitude, or like that, not on that he's attached, therefore he's working for the company. Does this make sense? So that principle has to be there, is that there has to be the service attitude. When that's there, then everything else comes. So everybody has a relationship with the Lord eternally in some particular service. But unless you have the mood of being a servant, then how do you take advantage of that? Right? Yeah. Okay. This particular attachment is invoked by practice of regulative devotional service to the Lord. And thus the devotee becomes attached to the eternal form of the Lord, exactly like one who is already eternally attached. So it's going to be... Yes?
Is it on the platform of Baba?
No. He's saying here is that thus the devotee becomes attached to the eternal... Is invoked by practice of regular devotional service. So as a sadhaka, then we invoke that particular attachment that's on that platform of Baba, like those who are on the platform of Prema. And that will become exactly the same. One will come to prema in the same mood as those who are eternally in that platform. So that's the whole thing, is we do our sadhana, that will bring us to that particular attachment, that will put us in that association, that then we will develop that particular love. But if we don't have that service attitude here, why will we have it there? Right? If we're lazy here, we're going to be lazy there, because the same person goes there. We have this idea, there'll be some, when I go there, it'll be so different. No, you go there. Right? So not someone else goes there. You know. You get there and you find out, what? I'm my grandmother? Oh, no. I thought it was going to be me. Yeah, you were unqualified. Your grandmother was qualified. Oh, then this other thing is, what is this, channeling? Or?
Yeah.
This is a walk-in. My spiritual body, no, mine. Yeah, okay. So, yes. No? Okay. Yes.
By the practice of sadhana, one comes to bhava.
Yes.
Bhava in association of those of prema.
You come to prema, like that. So, but that sadhana, now it says regular devotional service, because one may say, but what about raganuga? But raganuga is simply vaidhi performed in the mood of rag, but the form of it is the same. The regular devotion, the service is exactly the same. It won't look different. The difference is in the mood. So that's what you're having the same. Just like you're on the platform of bhava, what's the difference between bhava and prema? The activities are the same. But the mood is different. So one has to be comfortable with this principle that that the form is going to be, doesn't have to change, the mood has to change. Because we're thinking, if I change the form, you know, I'm doing this and things aren't going right, I change the service or change the place or change something, you know, change you know, I'm wearing a kurta, I wear a Bungle Bundy, and then that'll be, you know, whatever it is, and that didn't work, so maybe it was the cheddar. Yeah, so, you know, we'll keep changing until we think, but it's the mood. Yeah, because the point is the others, if they're favorable, you use them. If they're not favorable, why you'd use them? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like there. Yes.
A devotee who is lazy could argue that.
A devotee who's lazy could argue. Isn't that contradictory? Because if he's really lazy, he'd be too lazy to argue. Okay, so you're saying someone who's somewhat lazy, but not, okay, physically lazy, but not intellectually lazy. Okay, okay. Okay, but then if his mind is so tamasic, it's his mind that's saying that this is how it's going to work. No? Yeah, so then, but it's a tamasic mind. So how can he be so sure that that's how it's going to function? You can't depend upon your tamasic mind. Right? So his main point is that I can go on being lazy with the because of the tamasic body, but I'll still go ahead and think because of my tamasic mind. But if they're both tamasic, they both have a problem. So that's why you have to hear from authority, because the authority does not have a tamasic mind. Right? The acharyas, there is no tamasic mind. Does that make sense? So their mind, that's pure. So what they're saying, that's real. So that's why we follow the acharyas. Right? So it's not about the form that they're giving, but the form is that they're giving is what you're going to express, what they really want to express, which is pure devotion. Because if we use the tamasic forms, there's every chance that we will continue that way. Like Prabhupada is very particular that, at least in the West, in the 70s there, is that someone was a hippie, that if they wanted to live in the temple, they had to shave first. Because otherwise they carry on with their identity as a hippie, because hippies already think they're spiritual. You know, but hippies are very attached to their hair. It's like, 108% of their identity. You know? Like that. The clothes are optional. You know? But the hair, you've got to have the hair. You know, you've got to have the hair. You know, you ever hear of a bald hippie? No, not at that. Huh? Yes, yeah, but, you know. Yes, and so his point was is they'll go on with that conditioned way of viewing things and thinking things are fine. So if they wanted to move into the they could visit as long as they liked with their hair and come do service, take the shot, but they couldn't live in the temple unless they shaved. Like that. Because then they have to change that identity.
Is this possible in this life to change?
Yes. No, that's what's the point. Means you can go back to Godhead means you change the mentality. Otherwise, why do you go back to Godhead?
But I mean also the constitution, because somebody...
Constitution. No, you don't have to change the constitution. But the point is laziness is not a nature. Yes. Right? Just like we have that story with the king. It said, they set up a hostel to feed lazy persons, right? So as soon as they built the hostel, then hundreds and hundreds of people came, and once it was, they were all there and it was full, then the king said, light it on fire, right? So as soon as he lighted it on fire, they all run out, right? Because though they're lazy, they're not that lazy, right? It wasn't a trick to burn these lazy people. It was a trick to find out who's lazy. Then they went inside and they saw two guys were still there lying on the floor. And one guy says, it's getting hot. And the other guy says, yeah, but if you roll over and put your back to the fire, it's not so hot. Right? So the king said, feed these two. They're bona fide lazy. Right? So how often you meet bona fide lazy? It means that they will, for their own benefit, they won't even do something. You find most lazy people, he doesn't want to do it. He won't vacuum, he won't clean, he won't do anything, but he will turn on the television and he will go raid the refrigerator. So he's not that lazy. A bona fide lazy person would not even get up to get the remote. It's too far away. You know, if you happen to sit down and you sat on the remote, then they will, might, especially if they didn't like the channel that went on when they sat on it. You understand? So that's the thing, is that they're selectively lazy. So that's all. So no, everybody has to do something. No? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And now I thought you said lazy intelligent.
Lazy intelligent. That means that you can think of plans and inspire others to do those plans and get it done. So you don't have to physically do it. Active intelligent means you move around, see everybody's doing. Lazy intelligent, you get everybody to come to you and give the plan, and they go out and do it. But that means you have to be able to inspire them. So you can't have somebody who's saying, nothing's happening. He says, no, but why are you not second? No, I'm lazy intelligent. No, lazy intelligent means it's efficient.
Yes.
Not lazy. You know, that's not intelligent. If nothing's happening, it's lazy, not intelligent. Right? Active intelligence, they go around, they go to everybody, they see like that, they're always moving around like that, so doing it themselves, so that's active intelligence. So more is, you can get more done, because how much can you see yourself? So if lazy intelligence means you inspire and get everybody else to do.
It's more goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Or you use a combination.
Yes.
Means as they're, the less they're trained, the more you do, the more they're trained, the less you do.
Yes.
That's the natural.
Yes.
What about being satisfied at the same time, do things to improve?
Satisfied, do things to improve. But what are you doing to improve? What does that mean, doing things to improve?
Improve the quality of the emotional service or the quantity of.
What has that got to do with laziness or satisfaction?
Satisfaction, I be satisfied with the thing that you have or who you are.
But what you have is that spiritual. What's it made out of? What you have, what's it made out of?
That could be.
Are you thinking because we're in the Dham, so it's actually Chintamani? Is that why you were? Is that the line of thought?
No,
but satisfied in what? You said in things. But what are the things made of? Material energy that you've connected to the Lord, so they're spiritualized, right? So the point is you're satisfied with whatever materially it has, but are you ever satisfied in service? Are we ever satisfied that enough service has been done, we've seen Krishna enough, we've chanted his name enough, you know, we've eaten enough halava, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, definitely not. It's the eternal principle.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it's two different things. So we're materially satisfied, but we're always trying to develop and increase the quality and quantity of devotional service. Right? But we may be satisfied in that we don't have any need to engage certain aspects of the material energy that previously were very important for us. Right? Let's say someone likes electronics. So they're always finding ways to do things with electronics. Yeah, no, that's very... I don't know if I've ever heard that before. Yeah, but to stay wet that long. He likes it, so he finds for everything, right? So therefore, and to get anything done, there's an electronic, solution, right? But then as he goes and he gets more in devotional service, then he just sees where electronics does have an advantage, like making a phone call with a phone. right? Then that's there. You know, you don't have to do it off your computer and bounce it off of Mars and all that, and then around the block, and then comes back, and then the guy next to you gets the, you know, his light goes on and off or something, right? You know, you don't have to do that. So he just uses it where it has an advantage. So that's materially satisfied. But it doesn't mean the quality of service, the quality of devotion, the quality of focus, the quality of being freed from karma and jnana is not increasing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here, if you're not satisfied, you're not happy. Only if you're satisfied can you be happy here. But on the spiritual platform, then not being satisfied increases happiness. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it really being not satisfied? There is satisfaction and desire for
more? Yes. It means you're satisfied with that moment, but then you want more. All they're bringing out is, it's two different things, so they generally aren't put together. Is that when we're talking about material satisfaction, we're talking about functioning in the mode of goodness according to our prescribed duties and without attachment. And the other is just saying is devotional service is so wonderful and Krishna is so wonderful that one never feels satisfied. One can go on forever being involved, right? Because in the material world, you do something nice once, it's great. You do it a second time, you know, it's nice. A third time, maybe nostalgic. And then after that, you just don't want to do it anymore. Right, but the spiritual, you can keep on doing the same things, and eternally you're happy. So it's two different perspectives, like that. So generally you don't combine them, because otherwise then that confusion comes in, because then we will label one or the other with the opposite. We'll either take the spiritual to be material, the material to be spiritual. Okay, so engine.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana ki.